Hi, hello, and welcome. You're listening to Oak Talk on GoMightyOaks.com. And today, as we begin Season 4, Episode 1 of Oak Talk, this is the Oak Talk Common Book Edition, Fall of 2022. The Common Book of this semester is Sandra Cisneros, The House on Mango Street. We're joined by a faculty panel. There will be some other voices that will lend their thoughts about this book as well. And at this point, we're delighted to have around this table as we record this, Dr. J.C. Campbell, who is Associate Vice President of Diversity and our Compliance Officer here at OCU. Dr. Sarah Wilson, who is Faculty Assembly Chair. She's also Associate Professor of Chemistry, as well as Director of the Honors Program, which is in its second season and second year of work. So if you have interest in the Honors Program and you're out there in the audience, please search for that on oak.edu. And I might ask Dr. Wilson if there are any other comments she has about the Honors Program. And Dr. Roger Minatra, Associate Professor of Business here at OCU, and a dear friend and colleague, as are all in attendance. You'll also hear some comments from some other faculty members and some other committee members that would like to lend their voices. But to our panelists who are here today, welcome. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Campbell, let's start with you as we think about this whole idea of the Common Book, this semester's Common Book, Sandra Cisneros, The House on Mango Street. What are your overall thoughts of the book, and what would you like to tell us about this whole idea of what you do? Tell us about, introduce yourself to the Oak Talk family.
Well, sure. So I'll answer the first question is, you know, overall, this is not my first time reading the book. I always enjoy it, and I always find something new every time I read it. So it's always a treat to just the vignettes and the stories within the stories and those real world experiences of living in a shared community. Growing up, hitting puberty, learning things, dangling, if you will, between being a child and growing into an adult. So all those things that, you know, I think we've all experienced in many ways has always been kind of a treat when reviewing the book. So essentially what I do here at the university is look forward to establishing a more inclusive community here at Oakland City University. Where not only inclusivity in a physical sense or an exterior sense, but in an internal sense as well. So inclusive of ideas, of knowledge, of beliefs, of thought. And I think that is very important to building a greater OCU and a greater society. So I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you, Dr. Campbell. Appreciate your remarks. I would be remiss if I didn't say I'm Steve Custer, and it's a pleasure to be your host for this session, but also for the four seasons we've had to this point of Oak Talk. And I teach in the School of Business, have adjuncted in different programs as well, but also a faculty athletics representative. And one subject matter area that's close to my heart is human resources, human resource management. The Society for Human Resource Management just recently remodeled their subject matter for the next 5 years or so. And I was showing Dr. Campbell just a few minutes before we're recording this podcast. It's called the Body of Applied Skills and Knowledge, the BASC. And a big part, central component of the 29 hexagon-shaped tiles in the BASC is this tile called Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. It's certainly very important in our culture. It's certainly very important in our country and our world. But it's also important for those that are entering and involved in some area of employment and some aspect of human resources. Almost every place you go has an HR department. And it's great to see that those things are valued, and it's great to see that this book that we chose covers some of those themes. So that's just a short introduction there, but also another tie into subject matter that we talk about. Dr. Wilson, we're glad to have you here. Tell us about what you do, and mention just anything you'd like to about the honors programs we get started.
Oh, certainly. Well, thank you for inviting me to be part of this podcast. In addition to teaching chemistry classes and physical science classes on campus, I'm an education researcher, and one of the areas that I find fascinating and am passionate about is increasing students' sense of belonging and self-efficacy in STEM settings. So I was sort of reading this book from that angle of how to increase students' sense of belonging. And just a little bit about the Honors Program. Like you mentioned, it's the second year that the Honors Program has been established here at OCU. And we have lots of room to grow and are excited to have more students apply and become involved.
Wonderful. Well, and your overall thoughts of House on Mancos Street, as Dr. Campbell mentioned, he read it multiple times and picks up something new each and every time. I know we have some questions we'll talk about, yes. But just overall takeaways.
So the first time I read this book was when it was assigned as our common book. But I have to say I've read it a couple of times now because I get that sense that each time I read the vignettes, there are new insights from reading. And I was intrigued as I read how many of the vignettes reminded me of episodes from my own childhood, even though I didn't grow up in Chicago and do not have a Latino background. But it reminded me of stories that I would share across the table with her if we were to sit.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Wilson. Glad to have both of you. And our final panelist that's joining us in person here is my dear friend, Dr. Rob Minotra. Welcome. We're glad to have you here. And tell us about you. You focus on everything, all things business, project management, economics, all those kind of things. And this whole idea you actually are a native. You have your background goes into the area in Texas and different areas. You've got some Western history and all those kinds of things. What were your overall takeaways as you think about this? And you've read this, and I've even borrowed your earmarked copy for some serious amount of time because we initially had this common book on for the agenda last year, and it was pushed. And I know you took some interest in it even at that time.
Thanks, Steve. You know, since we started doing this common book, I've tried to find ways to incorporate that into to every semester. And, you know, we've had several, and probably a couple of them are books I haven't read, which somebody would say, well, I can't believe you got to this point in life without reading those. This is one of them. The other one was 1984 that we did last year this time, and certainly had a lot of interesting discussions on that one. This one interests me, I guess, for one thing, being from the Southwest. You know, I tell my students I'm a flatlander. You know, living in a place where there's trees all around you is still kind of unnerving to me a little bit. But, you know, this, when she talks about a lot of these things, I recognize that. Living in San Antonio, she did, and I did, one of my very favorite cities, taught on the south side of San Antonio, and really enjoyed that, and then Missouri to here. But the style of this book is probably not my favorite. You know, I would just say I'm not a this type of poetry person. A lot of little short clips of this and that. I'm a storyteller by all means. You know, coming from Texas, if you can't tell a story, you can't stay there. Mm. You know, so. But you know, listening to and reading over the things of different events and. You know, having grown up in a small town in central Arizona, well, actually Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona, I can picture those in my mind. And in fact, I would just say, I'm pretty sure I was in San Antonio about the same time she was, the author was, and I drove by the house there on what did she call it? Very bright color. I can't think of it right now, but. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Well, thank you for your comments in that regard, and fascinating in that regard. And, you know, just thinking about some of these things that when she said she wished her name was Cassandra, not Esperanza. I have a Cassie named Cassandra. So, you know, all these things can be, there's a relatability factor, as you mentioned, Dr. Wilson, that just resonated with me. And I thought, when I hear little stories about neighborhoods, I'm a massive product of Mr. Rogers. You know, I always think about the neighborhood that he created in his way of storytelling, the life that he lived, and it kind of harkened back to a little bit of that. And when last year I read a sizable portion of it before it was pivoted to another book, and then this year before I went back and asked Dr. Minotra to borrow his copy. As I had returned mine back to the library, I pulled up an audio of the of and interestingly enough, when you pull up an audio, it's fascinating how different the perspectives are.
Yes.
Between reading this and having that vivid picture that says Nero paints of these stories alongside the narrator and how it is presented in that fashion. So I found that very interesting. But just the way that poverty was unpacked in mm-hmm. the book was an eye-opener. It always is. But it came off differently hearing it than reading it.
Yes.
I can imagine.
And, you know, just hearing that narrator saying, you live there, and one day I'll get a real house, and all that connotates. It's one thing to read it, but it's another thing to hear the passion that's in that voice. Even though it was not done in an ultimate emotional way, it just impacted me just a little differently than it did when I read it. So, getting to a couple of these questions as we think about that, the idea, Dr. Campbell, if we can go back to this concept that Cisneros writes of those who don't know about her neighborhood and the people in it. What do you think she's saying about the way prejudice shapes our perceptions of us and them?
Well, I think it's when we look at racism or sexism or ageism or any of the isms, they're based on categories that are constructed. And so we have to understand that even though Chicago was the framework by which she lived and in that small area where there are different beliefs and different smells and different experiences, there was a lot of even segregation and racial tension even in Chicago. At this time, there was a great deal of redlining going on. There was a great deal of police brutality in that time. And so there is this do not go past this street. You know, even when growing up in Louisville, I was always told that you should never go past 9th and Broadway because that's a dangerous part of the town. And so I think, you know, it speaks a lot about how then and really in many ways now there is this almost mystique is the word I can think of a them, an other, you know, a not like us, or that there is a group of individuals who want to share an experience. But I believe that because sometimes the us and the them are so far away culturally, that it can be hard to experience it other than in, through writing and through literature. And so that always fascinates me that I think a lot of us would not understand them if it not for literature, being able to jump into those stories and sense those experiences. And some not even realizing that these things go on or these things are happening unless we get to the root of them. And so I think her story is an American story. It's like any other story of not everything is sunshine and roses. Not everything is a piece of the pie, or not everything is as it may seem. But there is this small corner or this small group, which is a community, different, but it is a community that a lot of people do not know unless they live their experience and read it. So
fascinating. Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Dr. Wilson, what does this make you think of? And any comments in response or thoughts about what was said?
I had a couple ideas before hearing from Dr. Campbell, but I have to say I really love that that idea that you mentioned, that our access point to learning about all other cultures is often through media, whether they're written or television. That's such a good idea to remember and to try to read more broadly to learn other people's perspectives is a great reminder. When I had read this, there were two other stories that I was reminded of. One was this idea about Esperanza talking about other people would think her neighborhood was dangerous because they were them instead of us. And it reminded me so much of one of the chapters in White Fragility, our faculty book last spring, that proposed that same idea that sometimes a vehicle of prejudice is to say that another location is dangerous just because the people that live there look different. Mm. And it reminded me of that. Mm. Another was, you know, each time we have one of these common books, I try to read it first for the content that it says, and then the second time for what do we bring from our Christian worldview to understand the piece. Mm. And for this one, it reminded me of the story of the Good Samaritan and how the Jews made it a cultural habit to always bypass Samaria. Mm. They would never walk through it. There was a very strong us and them separation between the two cultures. And that the story of the Good Samaritan really shows us that that artificial boundary should not be upheld. Hmm. So that's what I thought.
Fascinating. Thank you, Dr. Wilson.
You're welcome.
Dr. Manatra, comments about either a conversation or anything specific to the idea of us and them and how and what is she saying or what do you think she's saying about the way prejudice shapes our perceptions of us and them?
Well, you know, Steve, when we talk about things, they key up things in your mind, you know. They're back there somewhere, and when something's mentioned, it brings it up. And I have to say a couple of things. And mine might be a little different than this. My daughter and my son-in-law went to school in Chicago, Moody Bible Institute. And, of course, coming from a small town in Texas, I thought, this is terrible. You know, what have you done? The first time I called her up, the sirens were in the background. I said, Sarah, what's going on? And she said, What? You know? I said, all those sirens. She said, oh, that's the police. They're down the street. That, you know, that wasn't a big thing. But the funny thing about it is her future husband at that time, you know, he told me a story later. His best friend is Mike Lucioni from New York City, lives on Staten Island. And they both met each other at a school out in the wilderness areas of the United States. And he told me about it. And later I asked Mike about it. And he said, oh, yeah. He says, my mother was just devastated going out there, you know, in that wilderness area. And she told me when I left and came back to New York, she said, I'm so glad you're here where it's safe because there's bear and moose out there. You know, and I guess the thing is, it depends on, you know, what you grow up with and as to what you see as fearful. And of course, this book talked about people moving into an area. They didn't know anything about it. They were fearful of it.
Yeah. So perceptions can be very broad-based in terms of, and across the board in that regard. So as we think about much of the book details experiences outside the narrator's house, why do you think, Dr. Campbell, that Cisneros may have chosen this book as her title, The House of Mangostree?
I think there would be a couple of reasons. I think that if you were to look at it from a more in-depth perspective, I think the mango street gives an implication. I think it could be even because of her affinity to it, her affinity to the area. Oftentimes, you know, you'll kind of begin to meet people that will say, oh, I grew up here, or I grew up there, or I grew up in this area, or I went to this high school. And in Louisville, Kentucky, it's very popular, more popular, ironically, to state what high school you graduated from than what college you graduated from. It's a huge thing there. And I think there's even implication there. There's a weird othering even there, you know, oh, you went to this school or you went to this school. So I think realizing it, having been a person that grew up on the same street most of my life, that street encompasses a lot of who I am today. Mm. So when I go back to my mother's house, there's a wave of nostalgia that comes to mind of, oh, I remember being at this stop sign and catching the bus or getting into a fight at this stop sign or throwing rocks at somebody by this creek. And so I think the title becomes so important, not just because you may have physically lived there, but even your memory, your experiences still lives in that space. And I've often find that spaces hold memory. So even my grandmother's passed, but even a certain fragrance brings back memories. And so, or certain, I remember I went to a restaurant and I smelled something and it was quite close to her peach cobbler. I mean, it was just an innate, it was just very clear to me. And so I think you kind of are engrossed in the experiences of that space, which is why I understand now. I didn't understand it before. It was so hard for my grandmother to sell her house because those experiences there. I mean, you raise children there, you raise grandchildren there, you know, there's all kinds of things. And so I think those experiences live with you.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Cisneros' choice of title. Dr. Wilson, thoughts?
It's interesting because I think there is absolutely a nostalgia for memories coming from a place. But I think she also may have named it the House on Mango Street because there's also a tension between where you come from physically and feeling like you belong or don't belong or want to belong from that spot. And I remember when I was really young and we lived on military bases, if sometimes when we were at elementary school, which was outside the base, there was a big distinction between the kids from the base and the kids that grew up outside the base, even though we were in school together. And the kids outside the base would call us Baysites, like parasites. And so even though there would be good memories about hearing taps at sunset and things like that, that were great memories, meeting people from all over, there is a sourness as well, thinking about growing up on a base. So I think there was a bit of that tension in her story as well.
And that resonated with you.
It did.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Menacha, thoughts?
Mine's
on the
a little
title?
Simpler. First mango I ever had was in Mexico. You know,
it kind of
relates to that. But yeah. I love a mango, you know. We went to Mexico. They cut those with a knife. You peel them like a banana, you know,
yes.
And they got a huge seed in them. Mm-hmm. But dried mangoes, yeah, they're good.
But I will say, you know, as a, you know, I'm a mighty oak, but I'm a Kentuckian. So, you know, and I've gone to school in multiple cities in Kentucky. And growing up in a small town in eastern Kentucky, I didn't know. We talk about us and them. I pulled for both major schools in Kentucky until I went to one school. And then they said, you can't do that. You know, then I went to the other school and they said, you can't do that. I said, why can't I do that? Maybe I was just a little too stubborn. But I held out for that. And we had a faculty colloquium discussion in the cafeteria right before COVID started. And it was a discussion of some political things that were out there. And I mentioned a comparison to the vitality of sports team allegiances and how that creates a passionate, well, you have to be for us, you can't ever be for them. And I disagree with that. I think there is a place to support, but it is interesting how that taps in to so many emotions. And some will say that you tap into that to have a them in order to find and you know some aspect of emotionalism that you can thrust into a constituency.
Steve, that I just have to say that branches out into a lot of areas. First time I moved to Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I'd lived in Dallas. I moved to Fort Worth to work for a company there, and I made the mistake of asking one of the management there. I said, well, how long have you lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area? He said, I've never lived in Dallas. There's a division between those two cities, yes. You know, that is very distinct. Yes. I've never lived in Dallas,
That's
you know. On that.
So there's a lot of ways to cast that us versus them methodology and what that looks like. But Cisneros paints a vivid picture.
Dr. Gervais McDaniel, professor of business and director of graduate studies here at Oakland City University in the School of Business, would like to add some thoughts about Sandra Cisneros, the house on Mango Street. Dr. McDaniel, what were your overall impressions?
I really enjoyed the book. I like the little vignettes. Some of those are very small, but it gives an inside look at what her life is like. And I think we're looking at ethnicity, the fact that she's Hispanic, and I think she feels some otherness because of that. And in some of those little vignettes, it talks about how people were afraid to come into her neighborhood, and she really didn't understand that. And so it's almost like she worked herself through an analysis of what it's like to be female and Hispanic. And I also think that she felt like young Latinas were maybe, because they are female, there were some barriers for them in her culture. And so she kind of worked her way through that in some of those little vignettes. It's like a kind of like an ethnography where you get a first-hand view of all of the challenges a young Latina would face, and how to work through those and what to do.
And yet such an easygoing style that Cisneros wrote. As a major Mr. Rogers fan, and his use of imagery and themes in his own neighborhood, Cisneros describes a neighborhood theme. And you articulated that well as you think about that. Why is a common book like this important that we study and value and learn from?
Well, I think if we take a look at her view from the Hispanic neighborhood, I mean, it's not unlike any other neighborhoods and ethnicities, and it helps us to understand that we all have our own little cultures. And if we understand hers and her Hispanic neighborhood, then maybe we could take that and place it, replicate it, and understand others.
Thank you, Dr. McDaniel, for submitting your thoughts and for being a part of our faculty podcast panel for the second fall in a row.
It was my pleasure.
And that is this semester's common book that we'll continue to have conversation and dialogue about. You'll hear from others as well. We hope you enjoy it as much as we have, and we continue these types of discussions. You've been listening to Oak Talk on GoMightyOaks.com.